we've been trying to tell better stories about women and clergy and the church, because we really need to tell better stories. Instead of just complaining about it, what if we flood the airwaves with something different? Hello, welcome to the podcast. You don't know this, but this is like the 10th time I've recorded this. So I don't even know what I'm calling this episode. I guess I'm calling it, I don't care anymore, but actually I do. So I was listening to my playlist in the car on the way home, and I have some 80s music on there. And I was listening to Phil Collins, I Don't Care Anymore. Oh, man. What a great song. I should put a link to the video in the show notes so that you can just go and listen to it and enjoy it. I definitely may have blown my speakers out in my car listening to that as loud as I could. And I probably wasn't singing. I was probably just more shouting. And then I started it over and played it again. But he's got a couple great lines in there, right? Like one is, I don't care anymore. I never did believe you much anyway. What a great line. And man, I'm feeling that so much today. So I kind of want to respond. This is kind of a weird episode because it's not really a deconstruction episode. Not interviewing anybody. It's kind of a, I don't know, I guess it's a clap back, maybe a really long one to some feedback that I've had since I have resigned my position. So first of all, I want to say there's been some people who have been so fabulous and said so many nice things. Anyway, I just appreciate you. You know who you are. Now that it's been a couple of weeks, and then I posted this week kind of a farewell video on my Facebook page, but you can also go over to my YouTube channel if you want to see it, because I posted it over there as well. And one of the things I said in the video is that I can't really talk about all of the reasons I'm leaving. And so then there was a lot of assumptions, like maybe there's an NDA, or maybe I'm afraid to speak up, which, like, if you've known me for 2 minutes, have you ever been afraid of me to speak up and speak my mind? I am a church planter, right? And then I had other people who maybe thought I couldn't speak up because, you know, I'd lose my credentials if I really said what I thought and what I believed and blah, blah, blah. And the truth is, when I start to talk about this, it's like road rage on steroids. I mean, I can just go from 0 to 120 in no time at all. Very Rambo. And I feel it very deeply. And it's how God wired me. He wired me to be empathetic and to feel other people's pain and to be compassionate and to be able to very much put myself in other people's shoes and also to see the patterns that are all around me. So if you listen to the podcast, you know that my number one strength in Strength Finders is connectedness. And that means I see how all of the things are connected. Which is why, you know, I get frustrated with other people who don't see the connections and they don't see the patterns. And I try to be patient because I know that it's something that comes easily to me. I'm also an Enneagram 6, which for those of you who are all things Enneagram, you'll know we are the loyalists, and that our greatest fear is safety and not being safe, and not feeling and not being able to trust ourselves. But I've worked really hard in the last 4 or 5 years to learn to trust myself, to be able to trust the still small voice that's within me. And I'm still not always really real good at it, because there are plenty of people around who want to try to think for me, to think for you. You know, we're supposed to check our brains at the door of the church and never have an intelligent thought again, a reasonable thought, especially if you're a woman. You, you know, shouldn't have, we'll just let the men think for you, okay? And so that's the reason why when I say I can't talk about it. But I've had so many people also ask me, are you going to talk about this? Which, first of all, let me just tell you that when I resigned to my church board, I shared pretty much everything with them. Pretty much everything with them. My church board knows exactly why I'm leaving, and they know that it has nothing to do with them. And they were like, yeah, name names and give details. And I'm like, you know, I'm not that kind of person. I don't play by those same, we don't play by the same rules, which is another line in Phil Collins' song, I Don't Care Anymore. And so I kind of was just trying to think about how much do I want to share, and just share it a little bit at a time, to see just like where I'm going to go with this. And then this week, in the last 48 hours, some stuff has happened. So I'm not even sure what to call this. I think it's a clapback. I think this is a clapback video. I think that's what this is, or a clapback episode, just a really long one. And the hypocrisy on my district, on the district advisory board, on the board of ministry is absolutely astounding. And so this is me. And then, you know, the comments I've had about, you know, I've been through tough times too, and I didn't quit. I hung in there, which first of all, I get. I can give you a little bit of grace there, because there was a time I thought that about people who were leaving. And there was a time that I even maybe hinted at that towards them. Like, come on, you can't just let one or two things cause you to throw in the towel. So let me make it very clear to you that it is not one or two things. Let me make it very clear to those of you who are talking smack, that I have 18 years of vitriol that I have shoved down my throat and kept quiet about. And most of it is from the last 3 years. And a lot of it is actual abuse, not you know, the regular bumps and bruises we get through life, not the little, you know, the little things that happen when human beings bump up against one another and there's friction. I think that some of the people who are talking smack, I think you've forgotten that I cut my teeth in ministry at Detroit First Church of the Nazarene, aka now Hilltop. And I was in the era with the Dale Spencers and the Dickey family. Yeah, I said it out loud. And anybody who sat on a board with them know exactly what I'm talking about. When I was on staff at Detroit First, I was the pastor of outreach and evangelism. And I had to beg the church board for months to give me money to get Bibles to give to new Christians. But they spent $3,000 on a petting zoo for the Christmas play. Now that's the kind of stuff that you do, you choke it down and you move on and you say, there'll be another day. There'll be a different hill to die on. Those are the kind of things in ministry that when we talk about those things, we're like, that was ridiculous. So yeah, you've forgotten. Because also when I was on staff at Detroit First, one of the large male volunteers in the children's ministry physically manhandled one of my children. And I know because that church has had a history, because you know, I attended the church for 7 years before I even came on staff. So I had been there for a long time. I had sat on the board. I knew. And one of the things I would say is I will never, ever put my call, my job, my profession again above my family, ever. And I think that we teach that the call is above everything, and that's a load of crap. And it's abusive, and we should never be teaching that. So I had a volunteer physically manhandle one of my children in trying to discipline them. And he thought that he could get away with it because I was a staff person and I wasn't going to keep my mouth shut because I wanted to keep my job. And I got news for you. I didn't keep my mouth shut. The first thing I did was march into Ron Blake's office to tell him that if he ever touches one of my kids again, I will be getting the police involved so fast that you won't know what hit you. That there is no job that is more important than my children or my family, period. So the problem is you pissed off the wrong person, the person who doesn't have anything to lose, the person who has historically for 18 years always spoken up against abuse in the church and the things that were wrong. And so you mess with the wrong person. And it was never about credentials. It was about stopping abuse. So now I will be naming names, and now I will be giving details, because you had a chance to do the right thing and you chose not to. So first, for things first, I want to give a shout out to my district superintendent, Dr. Kitsko, who has been absolutely fabulous. And he has never once demeaned or put down anybody who has come to him with a legitimate concern. He has diligently and humbly listened to that concern, taken it seriously, and followed up on it to the best of his ability within the guidelines that he was allowed to do, which is what the bare minimum of what I would expect of any district superintendent, and the bare minimum of what I would expect of any ordained minister, and the bare minimum of what I would expect of any general superintendent. Although our previous presiding general superintendent couldn't even be bothered to do that much. He dismissed us and basically was like, just figure out how to get along. You don't get along with abuse. You don't get along with narcissists. You remove them so that the church can get healthy and so that the work of the kingdom can go on. But instead, we have empowered the narcissist. We have empowered the bullies, and we have given them not one, but two buildings to expand their own kingdom. Yeah. And for those who say, well, you know, this isn't the place to be having this conversation online. Well, the problem is that we followed the protocol. We believed when they said, trust the process. We did. And still, they laughed at us. They called us accusers instead of victims. The one who was the abuser and the bully was called the victim. We brought not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, not eight, not nine, not 10, not 11, but 12 different stories. Yeah. Some of us weren't even allowed to tell all of our story because we were told, well, you know, only the things that happen after ordination, those are the only things we're allowed to actually bring to the table. And then the investigating committee, instead of calling each one of us and saying, tell me this in your own words, I want to follow up. Is there anything missing? Is there anything else you want to include? They never contacted any of us. Instead, what they did was they went to the supposed victim and gave him all of our testimonies, all of our stories. Even though per protocol of the manual, he was not allowed to see those unless it went to trial. He was not allowed to see them during the investigating committee process. Why are my glasses so crooked? But he got them anyway. They gave them to him anyway. And of course, he shared them with his board and who knows how many others in his church. And of course, we know this because then the board and he and his wife confronted the people that he had victimized. Oh, you didn't know that. Also, he went around telling people, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because I have been reassured by the investigating committee that nothing is going to happen. And so we took to social media, since we had heard from him and from other people who had been reassured by him that the investigating committee wasn't going to do anything, that it was closed. The case was closed. Something that was only supposed to take about 4 weeks, and they were supposed to decide whether or not this was going to actually go to trial, took 6 months. So we decided to just, well, you know, since the case is over and you've obviously decided to do nothing, we would just take it to social media and we're going to tell the story. We're going to tell the story because we want the abuse to stop. We want the bullying to stop. We want other people on the district to feel safe. And I posted one picture. Like, here's the irony, right? Like, here's the irony. Because I had said to my husband, I said, you know, if I did one fraction, if I did one of the things on this laundry list that he did, if I did one, I would have been ripped to shreds. They would have taken my credentials so fast, I wouldn't even know what hit me. But like I said this and I was saying this out of frustration, but I think there was a part of me inside that was like, come on, Joanne, you're just being dramatic. And then I posted one picture. I posted a picture with tape over my mouth and said, we will tell our stories. We will not be silenced. And that's all I said. So anybody who wasn't involved in the story wouldn't have known. I know this because I had a lot of people who messaged me who were my friends who were like, oh my goodness, what's going on? How can I help you and how can I support you? And trust me, I got plenty of stories that I could tell that have nothing to do with that individual. Oh, wait, that's right. I said I was going to name names. Gary Loudermilk. They have nothing to do with Gary Loudermilk or Family Naz. Plenty of stories. Like the time when I was in high school and I had this boy who sat behind me who would bully me every single day. every day. I hated math class because of the bully who sat behind me for months and months and months. He bullied me. Finally, one day I just had it, and he walked by, grabbed my ruler. So I turned around, grabbed my ruler back, and just decked him. And the teacher called me up to the desk and said, "Pigeon," because that's my maiden name, "I know you're a redhead, but you're going to have to learn to control your temper, or I'm going to have to send you to the office." And so I learned right away that what control looks like in women, what quote unquote self-control looks like in women, is that you keep your mouth shut no matter what happens, no matter who does it, no matter how many times it happens. That's what I learned. And then later on, the next year, I was dating a boy. We just started dating. He and his friends stopped by after school, who I also knew. Those two were also friends. And this is going to make sense in just a minute. Those two were also friends. Now, we weren't allowed to have, you know, my parents divorced when I was 12. So at this point, I had a single mom. And so we were not allowed to let anybody in. But, you know, it was they were my friends. So I opened the door and let them in. And we were just kind of standing in the hallway of the apartment chatting. I don't even remember what we were talking about, but one of them said, "You know, we could do whatever we wanted to you." And so one of them grabbed my arms behind my back, and the other one put his hand over my mouth, and they said, "Go ahead, Randy, do whatever you want." Now, I guess I was fortunate because my boyfriend had been raised in an abusive home. And so he went, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. He went into freeze mode. And so they just let me go and started laughing. And then they left. So I posted this picture of me with tape over my mouth saying, "We will tell our stories and we will not be silent." And that's it. I didn't name names. I didn't give details. I didn't even say what it was about. I just said, "We won't be silent." And then two district advisory board members, who also happen to sit on the board of ministry with me for 8 years, who have watched my ministry for 13 years, who knew that I'm a person of integrity, who know my story, who have seen me walk the walk and talk the talk, called my district superintendent and accused me of conduct unbecoming, but then turned around and said that Gary was the victim and that he should just be totally dismissed. There's nothing wrong. Literally, they said to me, "It's just his personality." And everybody has a different personality. They also told me that we have a big tent. Yeah. A big tent that allows fundamentalists and bullies and abuse. But God forbid a gay person or a prostitute gets saved and comes to your church. Or comes to your church and gets saved. Or just comes to your church. Yeah. Or let's see. How about my friend Courtney and my friends Courtney and Chelsea, who was the guest speaker for family camp that year. And the whole theme was 1 John chapter 4. I bet if you're a pastor, you even have 1 John chapter 4 memorized, at least a couple of verses. God is love. And what does that look like? How do we live that out in our daily lives? What does it look like if we believe that God is love? What does it look like to live that out in our faith every single day? That's what she preached on for 5 days. And then on the last day, the youth pastor or the youth director, or I don't know what you want to call him, along with the teens, sat up front. And when Courtney got up to preach, they all stood up and walked out in unison to protest, you know, because that's so mature. Now, of course, the right thing to do would be to call the senior pastor to find out, hey, did you know about this? What's going on? What's going on with this? Which, of course, the associate pastor did. And then Gary proceeded to just lay into him. I didn't know anything about it. I don't know what you're accusing me of, et cetera, et cetera. But here's the problem. If you're a lead pastor, you are responsible no matter what. It doesn't matter if you knew about it or if you didn't know it. Now, I happen to believe that he's probably lying his butt off. And that since his youth pastor said, hey, my senior pastor knew about it, I have permission to do it. I'm just going to tell you, if my youth pastor or my associate pastor pulled something like that without my knowledge or permission, first of all, I'd have fired their butts. Second of all, I would have marched them into my DS's office and had he or she personally apologize to the DS and the speaker for, well, conduct unbecoming. Oh, wait, did that person get charged with anything? No, they didn't. There is no excuse. You have a staff member that pulls something like that, you're the lead pastor. It falls on you. You're responsible. If you don't want to be a lead pastor, or if you don't want the responsibility of being a lead pastor, then step out of the pulpit. You have no right to be there. I also feel that way if you're not going to speak up against abuse, you have no right to be on the district advisory board. If you're not going to speak up and speak out against abuse, and if you're not going to be someone who stops it and prevents it, you have no right to be on the district advisory board or the board of ministry or any district leadership whatsoever, period. It's a repulsive. It's disgusting that we have allowed this to continue, not for 3 years, not for 5 years, not for 10 years, but for decades. Yes, Dr. Anthony and Dr. Gardner knew exactly what was going on. They knew that he bullied Jason Crum. They knew that he bullied every single pastor that had ever been at West Flint. They knew that he bullied other pastors on the district as a lay leader, but he was still allowed to have not just a local license, but a district license. And we won't even get into the ordination interview because, yeah, I was in that interview. I still have PTSD from that meeting. We ordained somebody who literally sat there in the ordination interview and said that he was opposed to the Wesleyan view of Scripture. He told us in no unspecific terms, he did not use the word fundamentalist, but he told us he was a fundamentalist because he was completely opposed, or, well, I guess he's a Calvinist, but I've heard enough of his teachings now to know that he's a fundamentalist. Come on. Good grief almighty. The people sitting around that table knew that only days before that, Shelby, who was at his church, who was supposed to interview for her district license, she had simply asked a question. Could we put this on the agenda for the board meeting? And he was so offended that she would question his leadership in any capacity that he revoked his recommendation for her to receive a district license. This was days before his ordination interview. And the people sitting around that table knew it, and they didn't say anything. They kept it quiet. They sat on it. They kept it quiet about how bad he and Linda have treated the staff at family camp or at Water's Edge Campground. how they just bully them and harass them and demean them and talk down to them on a regular basis. How it was so bad in 2022, that pretty much just about everybody on the staff wanted to quit. And that when they finally did step down because of all of this mess, that we had record numbers of people signing up for camp. We've learned nothing. Have we learned nothing from Bill Hybels, Darren Patrick, Ravi Zacharias, Carl Lentz, the Bonehead over in Australia, Liberty University, John Piper? Have we learned John McDonald? Have we learned nothing? John MacArthur? Have we learned nothing? It's not like you didn't have a flashing neon sign that says bullying and narcissism and spiritual abuse always lead to more abuse. They lead to physical abuse. They lead to sexual abuse. They lead to power abuse. They always lead to other forms of abuse. And here we are in 2023, after you guys have said, the District Advisory Board and the Investigating Committee, that there's nothing wrong here, that we're just all full of crap. And now his son has molested somebody during camp meeting. And it's okay for me to say it. And well, you're going to be like, oh, Joanne, because that it's public knowledge now. I do want to say, give credit to my district superintendent, Dr. Kitsko, who has made sure that the person that Josh was fired, that CPS was contacted, that our current presiding general superintendent, who happens to be Carla Sundberg, has been notified of the situation. That person's senior pastor, I don't know, maybe he's not going to Family NAS. Good night, Irene. I feel bad for you, whoever's church he's attending now. Good luck with that. Sorry the DAB didn't do their job. Sorry the Board of Ministry didn't do their job. Sorry the Investigating Committee didn't do their job. That they didn't pay attention. That they didn't listen to us. You know why women are always the ones who recognize the signs of abuse before the men? It's because we have to. It's because we have to. And you didn't listen to us. And now here we are. This is exactly what I said. This is what I said. In the mediation meeting, which a lot of people don't even know about the mediation meeting. Oh my goodness, you're so missing out on that. That was awesome. They decided to throw us a bone, the district advisory board. They're like, we're going to give you a mediator to make it all better so you can all kiss and hug and make up. You don't kiss and hug and make up with a narcissist. Come on. That's like psychology 101. You don't even need a degree for that one. We all know that one. Somehow you've convinced yourself that we do. I don't know if you just don't care or if you're sociopaths. I haven't quite figured that out. Or maybe you're just neurotypicals. I don't know. But so they decided to throw us a bone and they brought in this mediator who, first of all, I just want to say was sharp as a tack. Like, he screwed up. He like brought in somebody who was really good. Who, after meeting with the Loudermilk, said to us, people like that don't change. They just get worse. They will just keep abusing. They will just keep doing what they're doing. It doesn't go away. There is no making up for it. Like, somebody from the outside is looking at our mess, your mess, District Advisory Board, your mess, Board of Ministry, your mess, Investigative Committee. And saying, you guys, what the heck are you doing? You know, when he was interviewed for ordination, there were 4 no votes and 3 abstentions. Now, some of you who don't know anything about the procedures, like of how this stuff works, if you have a divorce in your background, before you can even start the process of saying, hey, I feel like I have a call to ministry, you have to meet with the board of ministry and you have to tell your story about divorce. And then we vote on it to remove that as a barrier. And so you can't, I don't know if you know this or not. I don't know if this is public knowledge, but you don't want two or more votes. No votes. If you get two or more no votes, even though technically it's a two-thirds vote, when we send that to the general church, the general board of superintendents will deny that person a district license. So they can't even start the process. But you can get ordained with four no votes and three abstentions. I don't know how that works. I was in there and, you know, I am not really great at math, but I am not an idiot. And I'm just pretty sure I don't know how that was two-thirds vote. If it was two-thirds vote, it was by the skin of his teeth. And so now here we are. That was how 2020 started. That was before the shutdown. That was like right before the shutdown. We should have known. We should have known. Like halfway through 2020, when Debonair decided to do an art fair on the front lawn. Now, if you've been around me long enough, or if you've been around the district long enough, you know that Debonair is always doing something, I don't know, off the wall. That's just who we are. It's our DNA. And so we decided to do an art fair on the front lawn because there are a lot of people who had side hustles and all the arts and crafts fairs have been shut down. And nobody could do, it was just a way for people to make a little bit of extra money. Plus, if we did it on the front lawn, we would get some face-to-face time with our neighbors because we are literally in the middle of a neighborhood, which that's going to be a whole nother episode. I'm going to talk more about what that means to be in a neighborhood and I'm going to share more about that. Anyway, and so we wanted to have some FaceTime, which we did. We ended up having like 10 or 11 vendors and we had like over 100 people that came through that we got to just have talk to and see our neighbors that we hadn't seen in a while and pray for people and pray with people and encourage people and all the stuff, right? That you're supposed to do when you're a neighborhood church, when you're a community church. And so we didn't charge anybody for tables. We just said, bring your stuff, sell your stuff. We just want to be community. And PFLAG, of course, was one of the people who used a table. Now, if you're not familiar with PFLAG, it's a support group for parents and families who have LGBTQ children. And so they were there. They were selling arts and crafts for, I don't know, something, some project they were doing. Somebody was there selling doTERRA. My daughter was selling paintings for... she was splitting it because she was, you know, paying to her way through college. So part of it was tuition and then part of it she was going to also give away. And then of course people saw that there was stuff with rainbows on it because God forbid, I'm just waiting for evangelicals to rip Noah's Ark out of the Bible because there's a rainbow in it because you're so offended by rainbows. And so that church, again, Family Mass, called my other DS, Dr. Gardner, and said we were having a fundraiser for gay people. And I was out of compliance with the manual. Then they called again my DS, my current DS, Dr. Kitsko, and I think that was an email. But that was being held by my former worship pastor at the Methodist church 7 miles down the road. But somehow I'm responsible for a pride parade that's being held at the Methodist church down the road by my former staff person. But you can't take responsible for your own son who's molesting children. And then, like, to top it all off, like, today, one of those people who called my DS on me to say, accuse me of conduct unbecoming for posting that picture, posted a blog post about how the Church of the Nazarene is leaking, and we're losing young people, and we're losing pastors, and maybe we should just take some time to listen and have some civil conversation. You do realize how hypocritical that is, right? You do realize how hypocritical that post is. Because we tried to have the conversation with you multiple times. Multiple times. We talked to the people who you're supposed to talk to long before anybody ever wrote letters to the district advisory board, long before anybody brought stories, long before. We have been talking about it for years, about the way that Gary and Linda and Family Naz have treated people. And you don't listen. And now we are in the position that we're in because you wouldn't listen. Because you wouldn't heed what we were saying. Because we were just being drama. I think the real, like for me this last year, the real kick in the butt, other than Rob and Alan, okay, calling Kitsko on me. Like, you have my phone number. You could have picked up the phone. That's what you could have done. Because you know who did pick up the phone? All the other people, all those other women who brought stories to you. That's who picked up the phone. The last Board of Ministry meeting that I was in, we were interviewing candidates for ordination. And Alan turned to me and told me the story about how when he was in ministry early on that, whatever, speaking in tongues was the thing that everybody was upset about. And apparently there was a general superintendent who, if he was praying over somebody at the altar and they got the gift of tongues, he would slam their face down into the pew or into the altar. And he told me the story as if to say, look, this isn't that bad. I'm guessing, you know, keep your mouth shut, Duane. Oh, wait, I've heard that so many times before. So let me tell you, I don't care if that person is a general superintendent. First of all, he should have been charged with assault. And second of all, he should have lost his credentials right there on the spot. We don't play like that. What part of Wesleyan holiness do you not understand? Because you're all high and mighty about us not letting gay people into the church, but you sure have no problem with pedophiles and narcissists. I just feel like maybe you should get your priorities straight. Or maybe you are just too much of a coward to speak up. Maybe that's really the issue. You know, you guys want to say stuff about me, and this isn't the place to do it, and this isn't the place to speak up. So we never speak up? We never tell the truth? We're supposed to lie? We're supposed to deceive people? Well, I'll tell you what, Rob. You want to have a conversation? Can you hear me now? This is why people are leaving. Because when we come to you about the important things, you shut us down. You won't listen. We get told that, you know, there's just bumps and bruises in ministry. No, this is not bumps and bruises in ministry. Fighting for 6 months to get Bibles because we needed the money to have a petting farm at Christmas, that's bumps and bruises in ministry. This is abuse. What happened to my child was abuse. What happened to Chelsea was abuse. What happened to Courtney was abuse. What happened to Brandon was abuse. What happened to Shelby was abuse. You want people to start staying in the Church of the Nazarene? Then you better start earning it. I told my congregation in 2020, I said, we spent 10 years building trust in our community. We are not going to blow 10 years of trust because of stupid masks. Put the dang mask on so that we can maintain credit and credibility with our community, so that when this is over, we can continue to minister to these people and not have to start all over from scratch. Because trust is a very valuable commodity, and you have lost it. You have lost our trust. The district advisory board, the investigating committee, the board of ministry, you have lost our trust. And this didn't start with Dr. Kitsko. This had nothing to do with Dr. Kitsko. He inherited this heap of pile of poo-poo. One, from Dr. Gardner, and two, from Dr. Anthony. I sat in that meeting. I sat in a meeting and I listened to Jason Crum telling Gardner about how horrible Gary Loudermilk was being to him. And then still they gave him a local license, and they gave him a building, and he gave him a second building to expand his kingdom. I've heard the other stories of pastors that I don't have permission to name. Every time I post one of these episodes, I get new people messaging me, DMing me, texting me, emailing me, saying, let me tell you my story of how either Gary or Family Naz has hurt me and my family, how they have abused us, how they have bullied us, how they have harassed us. You like, bring the proof. Do you know that in a court of law, my testimony matters? In a court of law, my testimony matters. I don't have to have it recorded on tape. I don't have to have a video. I don't have to have something in Gary's handwriting. You don't even hold to those standards. You don't even hold to earthly standards, let alone to godly standards of following up on the stories that you're hearing. And then you, the district advisory board, have the nerve to sit there and allow the Loudermilks to threaten Dr. Kitsko, Jeff Cardaman, and Dr. Linda Bynum with taking away their credentials. And you sat there on your hands and you did nothing. You said nothing. You didn't defend them. Why should we trust you? Why would we want to stay? You are untrustworthy. I have zero respect for you. The reason I can't stay is because when I get up in the pulpit to preach, I represent you, and it disgusts me. I have anxiety attacks writing sermons because I know I stand up there and I represent Eastern Michigan District. That's why I left Debonair. Not because I'm weak, but because I'm strong and I have integrity, unlike the rest of you. I don't know how you sleep at night. I don't know how any of you have slept for the last year, knowing that you have put an abuser back out there. And now we see it. Now we see the evidence. Because children who are verbally, spiritually abused become either victims or abusers themselves. And ta-da! You're supposed to be a leader. Stand up and lead. Get a backbone. Do the right thing. Yes, it's hard, but you know what? I would rather sell pencils on the street corner than to lose my integrity by failing to protect the least of these, by failing to protect those who have been victimized, by failing to prevent future abuse. So you pick the wrong person. You pick the person who cut their teeth at Detroit First. I got up in the morning and I started my day by getting punched in the face for 6 years. When I went to plant a church, people were like, man, church planting is hard. I laughed. Church planting was nothing. Church planting has been a blast. Church planting has been easy. I would plant 12 churches at the same time before I would ever go back to one of those churches, before I would ever go to a Hilltop or a Flint Central or a Flushing or the Woods, before I'd ever be on staff at one of those churches. Because you know what? The lost people love us. Lost people, they're so desperate for love. All you have to do is just be a decent human being and they'll respond to you. But you can't even be a decent human being and protect the people that you said you were going to protect. You sit on that district advisory board. You sat on those district boards of any kind. What, because you think you're going to get a medal for it in heaven? No, you're there to do a job. Well, Pastor Duane, have you ever spoken to hard about hard stuff ever before? You don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like to be in my position. You don't know what it's like to stand in my pulpit. You don't know what it's like to pastor my church. Wonder how many times I've preached on abuse in 13 years of ministry? At least 13 times. At least once a year. Probably more than that. I preached on pedophilia and how it's wrong, and that as Christians, we have a responsibility. If I was going to be there in January, I would have preached my repeat sermon. I bet my congregation could quote it. They could probably preach it without me preaching it, because I said I preached the same January message every 4 years, and that is that we worship the Lamb of God and not the President of the United States. And then our church, we had about a third that were Republican, a third were Democrat, and a third were independent or libertarian. And so we just knew that we had to respect one another because that's who we are. And we all have a voice. And we're going to treat one another with respect and dignity. And they did. We made it through. No fights in Sunday school. Well, until 2020, that was, you know, an anomaly, I guess. But we let Gary Loudermilk pass out Trump propaganda at the door, directly threatening our 501c3 status. And to preach sermons on Facebook Live, basically telling their congregation that if you don't vote for Trump, you're not a true Christian. And we let our DS, former DS, join a Facebook group that wanted to start a petition to remove people's credentials if they voted for voted Democrat. And we just think that's acceptable. This might be a good time to listen. Pay attention. This is why we're leaving. No. Somebody, of course, I'm sure, maybe all of you on the district advisory board, in order to be consistent, is going to accuse me of conduct unbecoming with this episode. So do an investigation. Put me on trial. I want the district to see your hypocrisy in living color. Yep. And that's why I can't talk about it. Because I just can't believe the people I trusted, people I believed in, people who preach holiness, couldn't be bothered to protect the least of these. I told the mediator, you know, my story is really not that big of a deal. I've done this for 18 years. I mean, heck, I couldn't even get Bibles. But as a board of ministry member, I have a responsibility for those licensed ministers. And when I watched an ordained minister bullying licensed ministers, also that could be a reason why you're losing young people. I think that there was probably about five or six of them that we lost because of Gary Loudermilk. So that's, I guess, one answer to your question, Rob. Older fundamentalist ordained elders bullying young ministers who are trying to answer the call until they just finally leave. And it was our job to protect them. We didn't do it. I think what really bothers me, and this is, I guess, kind of vain, I shouldn't even say this out loud, but I thought, man, this would never happen on my watch, but it did. I feel like I just let them down. I deserve to Pastor Debonair. All I wanted to do was reach the lost. That's all Chelsea wanted. Courtney, Brandon, Shelby. But you just put obstacles in her way over and over again. Slap us with handcuffs, put tape over our mouths, and say, now do ministry. You sit there in your big churches with your middle to upper middle class families, judging us. I mean, maybe that's why we're leaving.